Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio podcast brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at the Moda Bake Shop. And I am here today with a really exciting guest. My first guest is from The Sewing Loft, Heather Valentine. This is a really cool site. If you haven't been there before, it's not just quilting, which I think is fabulous because so many of us cross over and do other things with our fabric besides make quilts or came from other areas of quilt making. So I'm excited to have Heather come on and tell us a little bit about what goes on at the Sewing Loft. Hi, Heather. How are you?
Hi, Pat. Yourself?
I am good. I've just been telling people about your website.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm so excited to be here with you today.
I know. This is really great. Tell me a little bit about one of your focuses, because I've sort of been cruising through your website while we're trying to get hold of you. And I know that one of the big things that you like to do is repurpose different products. Tell me a little bit about how you sort of think about that.
Well, I love to really think outside the box. And when you limit yourself to specific materials, you kind of have no choice. You have to kind of look outside and think about what you can do with them and repurpose them in other ways. And it really keeps you focused and kind of brings out your creativity in a whole other way than if everything was limitless in terms of your supplies.
So when you repurpose something, what is your favorite thing to look for? Do you have maybe a tip on how to do that?
Well, I think most people tend to gravitate towards clothing because it's something that they currently have available, and they're very familiar with fabric. So for them to rip something apart and remake it into something new again, it is easy. I mean, I love to reuse leathers from handbags and also just jackets. We all have suede jackets or leather jacket in our closet that only has seen a better day, and you can make that into something else. So those happen to be a few of my favorites.
Ah, now what would you do with the suede jacket? Tell me, what would I do? Would I make a bag or what? A pillow?
Well, I actually love to wear little leather cuffs. Just as a quick accessory. So I make quite a few of those. I pretty much wear them on any given day, I think even to my husband's dismay. But I make those. I love to make little wallets, key fobs. There's actually quite a few things that you can do with them. You can even use it for little accents on a bag that you're making, just as a nice little detail, or even a little zipper pull.
Ah, you know, that is so great. I would not have thought of those things. I'm sort of very stuck in like quilt mode sometimes. So that's why I love going to look at your blog, Heather, because you have all these other things. Now, recently you were teaching an event called Sew South, right?
Yes. It was a retreat for Southern Stitchers, and actually quite a few people came from the West Coast, so it was really fun. It was my first teaching experience, and I actually taught one of my new projects. It's called the Scrap Bucket, and one of the best things that I thought was fantastic that everyone made their own fabric ahead of time. I shared with them one of the little techniques that I use for repurposing all my scraps. And they created full yardage from these smaller bits. And it was very telling what everyone's personality was by their fabric. If they were a true scrapper, they didn't worry about straight lines. It wasn't neat and tidy. Everything was kind of all over the place, which is very much like myself. Or if they were true quilters, everything was straight lined, clean finished, and quilted to the nines. So I loved seeing the way that everyone's bucket was so different, and the creative process, even though they were using a simple pattern, was limitless.
Now, tell me a little bit about the construction of that. You have that on your website, right?
Yes. Anyone can go and download it and make it. It's very simple. It's an oval base and has a straight side. And then to give it a little bit more dimension, it also has eyelets on each side to create handles with rope. I like the cotton rope. And you just tie it through, make it into a knot on each side, and you can take it to go. I have them in quite a few different sizes in the house. I use them for magazines and always in my sewing space for the different scraps.
Yeah, you know, we can't have enough containers, can we?
No, not at all.
No. Whether we make them or we buy them, we have to have containers. We are that kind of people. When we were writing, Heather, you told me that you really do like scraps. What is it that you like about them?
Oh, they're like little bits of goodness. I don't know. I just can't give them up. It sounds so silly. But I love fabric, as I think most people within our industry do. But it's the smaller pieces that I find that are like, well, I can use this for an applique, or I can just use this over here. And for some reason, I wind up with a ton of them to the point that when my basket is overflowing, I really need to clear out or clean out. And that was one of the reasons why I started doing that fabric. It had started with my daughter's clothing that I just couldn't part with. So I had ripped it up and made it into something new and was able to repurpose it in a whole new way.
I also love that you had a project in one of the Martingale books called Kitchen Stitches, and I had featured the actual coupon holder that you did because that was so darn adorable. And that's another place that you could use small scraps, couldn't you?
Yes. You can really use them for anything. You can put them on little details on a purse, your pillows. You want to personalize something. Really, it's endless. Which, again, leads me to my scrap hoarding issues.
Right. And your buckets, your mini buckets. Yes. Now, we are close to the end here, but I want you to tell us, do you have a method for either cutting them up or storing them so that you can use them more efficiently?
Well, storage, I think I've pretty much tried everything that's out there. I've gone from the clear plastic shoe hangers that you hold in your closet, and I sort them by color, to the large Rubbermaid bins. And at this point, I am really trying to challenge myself to use everything that I have. So I'm storing them in the buckets in my sewing space, and when they are filled, it's time to clear out or get stitching.
And if you clear them out, do you donate them to somebody or do you use them for stuffing?
I've been donating them to a local Girl Scout troop.
Wonderful.
That they will do something fun with them.
Wonderful. Well, Heather, this has been so great. I'm sorry it took us a second to get hold of you, but I am so glad that we did.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's been so much fun.
This is I'm Pat Sloan talking to Heather Valentine from the Sewing Loft blog, thesewingloftblog.com. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I have another guest, designer Bonnie Christine. So we are going to be back in just a second.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have art gallery fabric designer, Bonnie Christine. Her fabric is just gorgeous, and I am so excited to have her on here to tell us about her quilt making and her fabric designing. And her latest line is called Sweet as Honey, and it's just gorgeous. Welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I know, I am too. And your fabric is just so gorgeous. If that hexagon quilt is missing, don't look at my house, because I'm sure it will not be here. It's like,
oh, thank you.
That is such a beautiful quilt. Now, Bonnie, I have to tell you, not everybody, you already know this, I have to tell everybody that your mother owns a quilt shop called A Stitch in Time, which was one of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's quilt sampler shops. Did you actually grow up in the quilt shop?
Yes, I did. She's always had the shop, and so I kind of grew up in the background around fabric and sewing a little bit and crafting a lot. And I actually worked for a little bit after I got married. I worked in the shop, kind of doing behind the scenes stuff and ordering fabric. And it's just really where I fell in love with quilting and fabric design and all that kind of yummy stuff.
Well, I mean, I think everybody dreams, you know, once they're a quilter, dreams of either owning a quilt shop or being able to go to one every day. And so, you know, you've lived our dream already.
Yes, so I'm very blessed. It's a beautiful line of work.
Now, tell me a little bit about your background, because you are, do you paint your designs? Are you a painter? Are you a graphic artist? What do you call yourself?
Sure, I do everything by hand. I didn't go to design school. I ended up going to business school, and so I really decided to get into this after I graduated. So I'm self-taught and kind of just started from scratch. So I usually work off sketches and then, of course, turn everything into illustrations on the computer, but usually always start with a pen and pencil, pencil and paper sketch.
Oh, well, your pieces look very painterly. Do you ever paint at all, or?
I paint a little bit. Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun, but I don't know that I would call myself a painter. But I dabble in it, and a couple of my pieces have started with paint. But yeah, I do love it, and I appreciate the art of it very much.
So how did Sweet as Honey come about? What was your process? Tell us a little bit about the line. This is your current line that's in the stores now, right? Or just coming?
Yep. Sweet as Honey is the line that came out a couple of months ago. My first line was called Reminisce, and it's also still in stores, but it was my first one. And then the next one we'll be releasing really soon. It's called Winged, and it's about birds and butterflies, and it's going to be coming out really soon.
Ah.
So, yeah. So Sweet as Honey is really just about kind of the love I have for nature and gardening, and full of woodland animals and bees and birds and, of course, florals. And just was kind of inspired by sunshine and being outside. And it's really full of spring colors and that kind of thing.
What I love is the bees cap and the bees. I don't know why, but I just have always loved those images. And yeah, and yours are so fresh. They're not primitive, because a lot of times a bees cap, because it's a very old object that people, a lot of people don't even know what they are. They're from colonial times. They put them in the gardens to attract the bees. And I just love the fabric is so soft and pretty. Do you get like a mood board, or how do you get your sort of inspiration going for the collection?
Yeah, I usually think about a collection for several months, and I always take my camera or my phone camera with me and sketch pad. I kind of carry it around for months and will jot down ideas. And so I really had a round out idea of what I wanted to do before I actually start to sit down and sketch. And so I've always loved bees and, honey. I eat honey every day, and wanted to keep bees for a long time, but still haven't been able to and do it because we keep hopping around moving, but just something that I love and really connected with. And so that's how it came to life.
Now, do you also design patterns, or do other people design patterns to go with your fabric lines?
Yeah, so my mom and I really work together as a collaborative team for the patterns, and we make all of our own patterns. And I have several available in my Etsy shop, which you can find on through my website. But we have, for the Sweetest Honey line in particular, we have a really pretty, we call it the hexagon sit-upon. It's a big floor pillow poof that's in the shape of a hexagon. And we have a backpack and like a handbag and a quilt strap and a farmer's market sling, all patterns available for this line that go with this line in particular.
Oh, nice, 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 nice. They sound awesome. Now, you are you are super active at your site. And your site is called goinghometoroost.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do all, your photography is gorgeous. You do all kinds of things besides just talk about fabric and quilting. You have, you know, food and flowers, just all the things that we all love. What is goes on with your blog or your website there?
Thank you. Well, you said it kind of a lot. Kind of whatever I'm into, you know, at the moment, but it's kind of about living a little more simply and has a lot to do with homesteading and gardening and cooking and veggies and recipes, and but also the design aspect and sewing and tutorials and DIY projects, and feature a lot of other people, other artisans that are sewing or making things as well.
So that's neat.
It's kind of a lot of stuff, but.
So you actually have friends who come and will post on a particular topic and share at your site besides yourself?
No, it's just me.
Oh, but it's just you. Okay.
Kind of feature other people too, yeah.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean. Yeah, so you'll show somebody else's work. Like you have a gift guide roundup, and so that would be other people's products that you love and that your readers will probably love too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now you have something called the Roost Tribe. What's the tribe? I want to know about this.
Yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. The Roost Tribe is an extension of Going Home to Roost, and it's basically like a premium membership to my site. So you can sign up right on my site. It's $5 a month, and people can kind of come and go as they please. But for that, I send out lots of stuff to the members on a weekly basis. And it's kind of, like I said, just an extension of all the topics. So I send out recipes and Adobe Illustrator tutorials on how to design, send out ebooks and worksheets, usually on the creative business or selling handmade, have guest speakers come in and talk to the tribe about different topics. And we send out tutorials and printables like gift cards and gift tags and things like that, clip art, downloadable papers. It's a ton of stuff that you get every month. And also the group is just really supportive. We connect, we have a private Facebook group that we all connect on and just kind of feed off of each other's creativity. And it's a really inspiring, fun group of people to kind of host. So.
Well, and if people love your designs, your digital things are just beautiful. You know, you have like desktop calendars and other things where you take your drawings and put them out in digital form. They're just beautiful, just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
You know, you have sort of this whole lifestyle thing going. So it's not just, you know, the quilt part, the whole lifestyle. And you told me, you know, I asked you what you have for a hobby, and you told me you've added another person to your family, and he is your hobby. Tell me about your baby.
Yes, he's my latest hobby. He just turned seven months, and he's just the sweetest baby. So I get to spend my days with him, and he's good. He lets me work when I need to work, but of course I do a lot of non-working and lots of snuggles in between all this other fun stuff. So it is so much fun being a mom, and I just feel like my whole life exploded for the better recently with that. So
now, how are you fitting in? I know this, he's sort of a new addition to your whole workflow, and being that he's so little right now. Did you get tips on how to fit in your sewing time and your design time from friends before you, or is it like just you're just doing it?
Sure. Yeah. I asked a bunch of my mommy friends, you know, how are they pulling this all off? But every baby's different. Luckily my mom is pretty close. So she comes, one day a week to kind of help out and let me get ahead, but he sleeps really well still. So he sleeps he's a good sleeper. So I work while he sleeps, and I wear him a lot too. So I'll strap him on and, you know, get my work done just with him by my side. So
he's just make it all work, just like everybody else, right?
Just make it work. Yeah, it's funny to think about ahead of time. You think, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but when the day comes, you just get it done.
So, what do you what would you tell people to look for first when they're sort of exploring your site? Because being a lifestyle site, it's a little more in depth than somebody who just does things with quilt making.
Sure. Well, it depends on what you're interested in. But if you want to learn more about the Roost Tribe, there's a link right at the very top of my website that can give you all the information you need to know about that. On the sidebar, I have some information on Sweetest Honey fabric lines. And you can find the lookbook over there, which goes along with this line and where you can buy it, and also the patterns that are included.
Perfect.
There's a recipes tab. If you, I do all plant-based recipes, so they're really healthy and yummy. And if you want to explore those, you can go to the recipes tab.
That looks good. You've got everything sort of scheduled, you know, sort of tabbed out so people can find it. This has been so great, Bonnie. I just love your work.
Thank you so much, Kat. That means so much. And I'm having just a ton of fun with it and can't wait to see where it all goes.
Will you be doing the trade show this spring or waiting till fall?
Yes, I will. I'll be in Pittsburgh for market. You'll be there, right?
Yes, I will. So I'm going to come see you.
Good. I can't wait to meet you face to face. And
okay.
So, yes, we'll be up there for Spring Quilt Market in May.
Super. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to spend the second half with one person and sort of dive a little deeper into the type of work that she does, the type of quilting. She has been in quilt making a long time and has a lot of really fun things to share with us. Barb Eckmeyer, who has written books and teaches and travels, and it's just, she has got incredible work. So I'm so excited. We're going to learn all about her. Hi, Barb. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thank you.
So tell me first a little bit about how you got started in quilt making.
Well, I actually made my first quilt when I was in high school, which was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty bad. It had 5/8 inch seam allowances, and not a single seam comes together correctly. But I still have that quilt. After I was married, I started going to a quilting class. It was, do you remember the old adult education center system?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, yep. It was in California, and I think the average age of the quilter there was 65 if you took me out of the equation. And I was 24 at the time.
Oh, wow.
So my husband and I just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary, so I can always remember how long I've been quilting. I just have to remember how long I've been married.
There so. You go. Very easy, yes. So you actually did a whole sort of corporate world thing before you started working on quilting full-time.
Yes, my husband was in the military, and we moved around a lot. So quilting was my portable career. Mm-hmm. It was easy for me to teach classes at my dining room table, as long as my students didn't mind, like, stepping over Legos and stuff to get there. But when my kids got to college age, I did leave quilting for a while and worked in the corporate world as a financial advisor. And I did that for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I continued quilting for myself during that time, but I wasn't teaching or writing during that period.
Oh.
When I resigned my position and came back to quilting, it didn't take long before I was, like, fully immersed in it again. But, you know, during that time, things had changed a little bit.
Yeah, you were telling me that you had some new sort of tools to learn.
Well, yeah, the internet was one of them.
The wild world.
You think about, from 2000 to the present, if we don't really think about the time frame closely, we've become so used to our internet that it hasn't been available that long.
No.
Not in the big picture.
Hasn't. Right. When you were teaching, when you were traveling, did you teach in other countries as well, or were you always stationed in the U.S.?
We had an assignment in South Korea. We lived in Seoul, South Korea. And I actually worked for Bernina Korea when I lived there.
Oh,
and
wow.
I taught American students, but I also taught Korean quilt shop owners.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a train-the-trainer program. They wanted to teach machine piecing techniques in their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would come into Seoul to the Bernina headquarters. And it was so much fun because I taught with a translator and a dry erase board. No handouts.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is so neat. Did you find that it was similar, or did it really feel very different? I mean, I just can't imagine.
Well, if I had a class going on at my home with American students and another class of the same topic going on with the Korean students, mm-hmm. when I got to the end of the class and would give the homework, the American students, they were just like, okay, 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 and they were out the door. But the Korean students, they needed me to go through the homework with them.
Oh.
Step by step. They were very, very detailed on that. So I just had to kind of learn to go a little slower and be a little more patient about that.
Yeah, the language. Did you also speak any Korean? I don't know how long you were there and how easy that is to learn.
I lived there for 2 years, and I learned how to shop for fabric in Korean.
The essentials.
The essentials.
Right.
And I learned how to say just a few polite phrases and stuff. Mm-hmm. I got so that I could understand it better than I could speak mm-hmm. it. I think mm-hmm. that might be true with any foreign language, but
yeah.
There were always Koreans who spoke English in my mm-hmm. groups, mm-hmm. so there were always people to explain what I couldn't.
Right, right. Yeah, I lived in Europe as a child, and that was the same thing. I could understand it more, and then there were always people who spoke English. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about quilts and what you're making right now. Right now, what is sort of your focus of your quilt making? What do you love to do?
Well, I love applique. That's my very favorite technique. But I suppose you could say I'm kind of an ADD quilter because I like it all. So right now I'm doing a lot more handwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing these little 3-inch handpiece stars. It's a star a day.
Oh, my goodness. You're kidding. You're kidding.
Yeah, no, and at the end of the year, I'll have 365, and it'll be enough for a quilt.
There
so.
You go. Wow. That's a commitment. I don't know that I could do that.
Well, I've been doing all right staying on top of it, but sometimes I do fall behind.
Yeah, that's really crazy. So what I want to do, Barb, let's talk a little bit of sort of in-depth first about the back basting and applique, because you've written a book with Martin Gale called Back Basting Applique Step-by-Step by Hand or Machine. And to tell you the truth, Barb, I have been fascinated with back basting, which we're going to explain in a second, but I've been fascinated for many, many years. I have friends who do it. I come from a needle turn or a fusible applique world, mostly fusible applique now. But the back basting is kind of unique, and it's sort of, you have to think a little differently. Would you go ahead and just describe what back basting is for people who don't know?
Sure. Back basting applique actually is a needle turn technique, but what makes it different is the way you prepare the shapes. Mm-hmm. So you need to have your design drawn out as a full-size design, and you draw it, you reverse the image and draw it on the wrong side of your background piece. Mm-hmm. So if it's just a block, you're drawing the whole block out. But if it's like, a pot full of flowers, then that whole design needs to be drawn out from the beginning. And then you position just a swatch of fabric. I use rectangles or squares, mm-hmm. and big enough to make the applique shape. And I position it on the front with the right side up. Mm-hmm. Then from the wrong side, I baste on the line, on the drawn line. When you flip the piece over, your shape is now outlined in your basting stitches. Mm-hmm. So then you can see where to trim and leave your seam allowance. After that, you break the basting stitches, and that basted line becomes the turn line. Mm-hmm. And something kind of interesting happens. The basting leaves like a perforated line. So when you needle turn, it has a tendency to want to turn right on that perforated line. Kind of like when you tear your check out of the checkbook.
Right, right.
Kind of like
that. It has a – so let's back up one or two steps and do a little bit more detail now on it.
Sure.
Let's think of something simple, because for people who do hand applique, on the back, you would draw like a flower and there'd be a stem and two leaves, you know, just something simple.
Okay.
So on the front then, so you would draw that whole picture. The whole thing would be drawn on the back, right?
Yes.
Okay. Then you would go to the front and you would take your leaf fabric and you would put it where the leaf
is
going to be.
I use a light box to get it in place. When I'm teaching in classes, sometimes we just hold it up to the light to see. So if you're looking from the wrong side, you have your drawn line, and you can see if it's fully covered with that swatch on the front.
Right. So do you pin it on there and then flip it over, or you're just doing one at a time so it's not that hard?
I do pin. I like to actually have the pins on the side that I'm not stitching from, so they would be on the front.
Okay.
Because then my thread doesn't get hung up in the pin.
Yes. Smart woman.
Either that or lazy. I don't know.
So what type of thread are you stitching with your basting line? Because you're actually outlining the leaf. So we're talking about a leaf. So you're going to go on the drawn line on the back with your basting thread. What weight of thread do you use?
I like to use hand quilting thread.
Okay.
There are different kinds, and the one that's kind of glazed, it's a little bit wiry. That tends to leave better holes. Mm-hmm. And at that step, I use an embroidery needle, again, because it leaves better holes. And the basting needs to be pretty close together. What I tell my students is as close as you can, but still get the tips of your scissors under them when you get ready to cut them. Mm-hmm. So, because if they're too tiny, then it's hard to take them out.
You're practically sewing it down at that point.
Right, I know. But then if they're too big, you don't have enough of the little dot perforations.
So that would be my problem. I'd probably be making these great big stitches to baste it on there.
Tend to think of basting as big stitches. And so that sometimes people need a little bit of training on that. I have to tell you the truth, though. I do the basting stuff on the sewing machine. Because I'm always in a hurry to get things done. And so that saves me a little bit of time. And also, the sewing machine needle leaves really good holes. Think about when you make a mistake and you have to go back and rip it out. Mm-hmm. And it leaves that little line of holes.
That
works out really well when you want it to. When you want those holes.
And then do you just tie a knot by hand? if you're doing a bunch of shapes, or are you doing, like, let's just have a block and there's like 10 leaves. Do you baste all 10 leaves and then take it out of the machine?
Yes, if the, well, I stop. If the leaves are too far apart, I'll, mm-hmm. like, say you're doing a vine on the outside border of a quilt, mm-hmm. and I'll do the leaves, and if I'm using lots of different colors, I usually cut rectangles or a strip of fabric to work from, and I sew them one at a time, and cut the threads in between.
Okay.
Is that what you were asking?
Yes, yeah, sort of. Yeah, I didn't know whether you were sort of traveling along because, you know, you're sewing through your background if you were traveling. So I'm just trying to think through. I actually had not heard about doing it on the machine. So that's kind of a really great thought process somebody might have.
Yeah. Some people, they like hand applique because it's their handwork. It's mm-hmm. their work they can take with them, and they don't want to use the machine for that step. They prefer doing the basting by hand. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I like it that way, too, but I'm always in a hurry, and so it gets the job done faster for me.
You sound like me. I'd be like, wait, how can we do this? So I do have, we have a break coming in like 2 minutes, but let me see if we can squeeze this in. Okay. For someone like me who doesn't like draw my applique with a full layout design,
right.
I give just shapes, and mine's very big shapes, they're very organic. Person would have to take my stuff and lay it out and draw the picture on the background, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes, and what I suggest people do if they don't have a master pattern like that, they mm-hmm. can trace like your shapes with like a bold marker, mm-hmm. and then cut the shapes out, leaving some of that marking pen on there. If you just trace it with a fine point marker, you can't really cut it very well and leave that line on there. Mm-hmm. And so then they can position them on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and because they have that bold outline, then they can trace from that.
Okay.
So they kind of create a master pattern.
Yeah, so make like a, they create your own master. Yeah, I have a lady who did one of my patterns, but then she shrunk it on top of having to take all my shapes and make the back basting picture. She also shrunk it like 50% each block.
Well, you know, we quilters, if there's a will, there's a way, right?
Right. That's what she wanted it, but she wanted it smaller, so she just did it. Now, I think we have just real quick, I might have to cut you off, but when you have things that are layered, do you go from the bottom up, you just sew them one at a time?
Yes, I work from the bottommost layer and baste and then applique, and then any pieces that overlap that, then I leave like a little tab that mm-hmm. tucks under the mm-hmm. next piece. Like when you're doing it, you just pick up the edge and scooch it under.
Right.
But with back basting, because you're creating the shapes when you do the basting step, mm-hmm. you have to kind of think through it a little bit differently.
Right. So you just think your sequence through, realizing where stuff will be. Have you always done this technique for your applique?
No, I haven't. I used to do freezer paper applique with glued edges. The technique where you had to cut the back and get it wet when you were done.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was really precise, but then once I learned this, I think this goes a little faster.
Right, that's what
people
say.
You do not ever make a shape.
Yeah, people say that. They really do. Well, we're going to take a break, Barb, and we'll be right back.
Okay, sounds good.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. And I'm talking to Barb Eckmeyer, who is a great quilter, done all kinds of wonderful things. We were just talking about back basting applique. So, Barb, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about picking fabric, because I love your thoughts on picking fabrics to work with. Tell me a little bit about how you think about your quilts.
Well, when I'm getting ready to start a new project, I like to go into my stash and see what I already have that might work. And I'll choose a beautiful print that has a lot of different colors in it. And then from my stash, I'll choose different fabrics that have different textures and different scale prints, different colors, a variety of different shades, and that all coordinate with that beautiful piece of fabric. Mm-hmm. When I have all the fabric in the cupboard out on the floor and all spread around, have it all sorted just so that I just like it, then I take that print away. And what you have left is this really interesting, pretty arrangement of colors to build your quilt from. And when I think about doing it this way, it's like, see, a professional designed that piece of fabric. So it's kind of like having a professional color consultant in the sewing room with me. So that's how I like to teach for beginners to choose, too, because sometimes they're really intimidated about that.
You know, I think that's a really neat idea, because people will say, oh, use that fabric. But then a lot of times they get sort of focused that it has to go in the quilt, that feature fabric or the inspiration fabric. They'll try to force it in the quilt when maybe it's really just needs to be used for selecting.
Yeah, and if you want to use it in the quilt, you can have a put it on the back and have a beautifully coordinated back.
Yes.
Automatically.
Yes, perfect. It goes with everything in the front.
Yes, it does.
I also love that you don't feel you have to make quilts that match your home. This just, like, that's how I think. I make quilts because I want to make something. How did you always feel like that, or did that just happen one day?
No, I think that the first few quilts I made, I wanted to have match my house and to go in certain rooms in the house. But it was a freeing moment when I realized that the quilt didn't have to match the house, because there's so many colors to choose from out there. And so I remember specifically a quilt that I made that was purple and red and green and white. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a bright, cheerful quilt. It doesn't match anything in my house, so you just put it second quilt down mm-hmm. on the bed. And so it's just as cozy and warm, and it's pretty when you make the bed.
I know. I love to experiment with different fabric combinations and all those things. So it's really nice when you don't feel you have to have a purpose for what you're making, to just play.
But for beginners, it's kind of hard for them to do that. They want to make a quilt and know where it's going to go. So I always encourage them, does it really have to match?
Right, right.
What about the fun of making the quilt? When people ask me, what are you going to do with that quilt?
Oh, yeah.
I sometimes want to say, well, I already did it. I made it. That
right.
That's what I did with it.
I know. It doesn't have to have a purpose. But, you know, not everybody's a little different. Some people,
that's
they have to have a purpose. Are you teaching beginners now, or are you doing other types of teaching?
I always have beginners in the classes when I travel and teach for guilds, and I teach beginning backbasting applique at a store locally.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
We got to teach the beginners, otherwise quilting will die.
That's true. That's true. I know. It's true. And what you're teaching, especially for the backbasting, anybody can learn that. You don't have to have other techniques under your belt yet.
Right.
Awesome. Awesome. So I also want to hear about sashings, because you have some incredible creative ways to think about sashing your blocks?
That comes from one of the guild programs that I do, and when I'll show the same quilt, but how different it can look based on where you put the fabric, the darks or the lights in the fabric. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing that, I thought, oh, the experienced quilters are really not going to like this program because it's such basic stuff. But what I find is they like it as much as the beginners do. It kind of reminds them of things they've forgotten. For a while, sashing kind of fell out of favor, I think. But I see them in more and more magazines and quilt shows and stuff, and I think they're becoming popular again.
Yeah, it's nice to do something a little bit different. So, like, people can see your lecture photo on your lecture and workshop page at barbsfavorites.com, so they can kind of see where some of the samples are.
Yeah, there's a picture that has several different, just the cornerstone and the little design in the cornerstone. So a whole bunch of them there.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's like, well, I'm sure that there's other, you know, books and things out there, but it's just so much fun to do it a little bit different. You're very active in your guild, Barb. Tell me about why you love guilds, your quilt guilds.
Well, when my husband was still on active duty and we were moving around, the quilters is where I would find my friends. So I always wanted to find the quilt guild whenever I got to a new location. So it just kind of became my habit to be an active member. When we live in Kansas now, and he's no longer on active duty, he retired. And so I decided I was going to just join one guild and be a good contributing member of that one guild. With my traveling and teaching, I couldn't do that for multiple guilds.
Right.
So I don't double dip anymore. but we have a lot of neat projects that go on, and I love being with the other quilters, and I love encouraging new quilters. And another thing that I love helping with is helping people get started if they wanted travel and teach and go to guilds and do programs. So I've been helping some people with that as well.
Oh, that's really nice. It's sort of pay it forward kind of thing.
Yeah, somebody helped me way back when, so
mm-hmm.
It's time.
I think so many of us did. I mean, I remember being on a, you know, forum, which, you know, and people, somebody saying, well, I know so-and-so, and she'll tell you what it's going to be like. And
like, yeah.
volunteering her friend to tell me.
Yep.
So you've written more than just the back basting book. What are the other books that you've written?
My first book was called Kids Can Quilt, and it was about teaching quilting to children. Mm-hmm. And then later there was a sequel to that, Traditional Quilts That Kids Can Make. Mm-hmm. And in between, I co-authored a book with Sally Schneider on traditional quilts with painless borders. And then now the back basting applique book.
Do you feel the need to write another one? Are you thinking about that? Or
I do. I have a couple proposals in right now. One of them is on the sashings. So we'll just see. You know, there's a lot that goes to it, and it has to be marketable for the publisher to pick it up. So I just keep sending in my ideas.
I know. And they take a lot of work. I'm getting ready to send in the book stuff here in the next few days. So it's, you know, you have to make time for it, don't you?
You do. And that's something that I have learned now that I'm pretty much quilting full time, is that you have to treat it as a job. Mm. And I kind of work in a circle and rotate between sewing and writing and designing and guild volunteer work, and I kind of work in a big circle and give everything a touch, you know, and then keep going around the circle.
Do you find, because you came from sort of an analytical, you must have an analytical mind to have done sort of the finance stuff, do you find that when you're in like writing mode that the making mode is sort of gets turned off, or on the, you know, it's hard to do both?
Sometimes I tend to when I'm writing, I can go at it long and hard, whereas mm-hmm. sometimes then you need a break, and it's like, let me go sew a little bit, and then it'll kind of relax me a little bit.
Yeah. That's what I find is my brain is like, when I'm writing, that it's hard for me to do anything creative that takes any kind of mental effort. It's like I could, you know, sew a few blocks and that's
right.
about it.
I always have multiple projects going on. Mm-hmm. So when I was doing the back basting applique book, I was working with a short deadline. So I was pretty much starting and completing one project at a time all the way through, which is kind of rare for me to do that. And I remember one night I got to the last stitch in the binding, and it was still early, maybe 8 o'clock at night, and I thought, oh gosh, I don't have anything going that I can go sew on. It would be starting a whole new thing right now.
Yeah, I was like, oh my. So one thing, Barb, that you told me, I always ask people, and when we have time, I say, you know, do you have a hobby? Do you do something besides quilt? Particularly a lot of people that are on here, quilting is our business. And you are a pie baker.
I am.
Oh, my gosh. I love pie more than almost as much as coffee. I love pie. So tell me what your pie baking is. What is that is for your personality?
Well, I didn't learn to bake pies growing up. My mom makes great pies, but for some reason I didn't get that lesson from her. And so in 2011, I decided to teach myself to make pies. And I learned by baking a lot of bad pies. Mm-hmm. So along the way, you just tend to get a little better. But I found antique cookbooks was the best place for me to get lessons.
Oh, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I'd go to yard sales and antique stores, and I would buy up antique cookbooks, vintage cookbooks that have step-by-step pictures and stuff, the kind of things we like in our quilting book. The old cookbooks,
right.
The old cookbooks had those. And
wow.
So
what is your best pie that you make right now?
I think my husband would say it's my triple berry pie, which is blackberries, raspberries, and blueberries.
Mm. And the crust is a regular dough crust or another kind?
It is. I have the best luck with the recipe that has the egg and the vinegar in it. And I posted a story last summer on my blog that I put that recipe up on my blog. I call it the Army Wife crust recipe because it was a recipe another Army wife gave me.
Perfect. And you were just in Key West tasting the key lime pies.
Yes, I did. I thought that, you know, they say every restaurant puts their own spin on it. So I thought, well, let's eat pie everywhere then.
Right.
I didn't plan to do that. I thought I would have it once or twice while I was there. I ate a lot of key lime pie while I was there.
I love it. You did a whole post on your website on April 5th of 2014, and it's just a riot. You have pictures of each of the ones and some man with his pie. It's awesome.
Thank you. It was pretty fun doing that, too.
Well, Barb, this has been so delightful. I really have loved getting to know you and hearing about the back basting because, you know, I might have to really seriously give this a try for my work.
Well, you know, it's about finding the applique technique that works best for you. It's not for everyone, but it sure works for me.
Well, thanks so much, and I appreciate you being here.
Well, it's been fun, Pat. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, everyone, for being here for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We have lots of episodes you can go back and listen to. You can subscribe to iTunes. You can visit American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me, your host, Pat Sloan, at patsloan.com. And I hope to see you out there in Quiltland.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.